This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 171, Jelly Jelly Bobelli. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a beautiful Friday and a wonderful, exciting day to be doing Games at Work with my friend and co-host, Michael Martin.
Yes, it is exciting and fun to be indoors and not outside on a beautiful day like today, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It is so fun and exciting that, you know, the shades are drawn, the lights are on, even though outside it's sunny and temperate and, did I mention sunny?
And not anything like a hot, hot day like you get in North Carolina. But speaking of hot, we've got a hot show for
yes,
you with and all kinds of cool, fun stuff that we didn't know about until, what, maybe like half an hour ago?
Or something like that. And one of them is actually something I heard on a podcast earlier this week and then looked at the Kickstarter. And this is the Jellyphone.
Jellyphone. Yeah. So what makes the jelly so jellylicious?
So, you know, I've been playing around with a couple of different devices, Raspberry Pis, Pine boards. I recently unrooted and unbricked a very old Samsung tablet of mine and have it running Lollipop. And so I've been looking at different things to play with Android on. Now, I was listening to, I think it was Twit, maybe? Mm-hmm. It was either okay. Twit or MacBreak Weekly. And somebody mentioned this Kickstarter for a very small, under $100 unlocked Android phone called a Jelly Phone. And this thing, do you remember the, I think it was the Motorola flip phone?
Yeah, the StarTAC.
Right. Not the Razor one, but just the early flip phones that were kind of like the height of fashion at one time for mobile phones. And they pretty much filled the palm of your hand. And as we've gotten into smartphones, the phones have gotten bigger and bigger because screen real estate has become more and more important. And a lot of people have trouble putting their phone in their pocket. And
right.
I think that's one of the objectives of this phone, other than to be a fairly complete smartphone, maybe not the highest end processor, maybe not the highest amount of memory, maybe not the most capable screen or whatever. But this is, for $79 on Kickstarter, a 8 gig Android phone that's running Android Nougat. And if your apps are designed correctly and handle screen size correctly, they should run native Android apps on this phone.
So, and Nougat is the latest version of Android right
yes,
now, isn't it?
Yes, because O was just announced at Google I/O a couple of weeks ago.
Right, right. And, you know, I remember being disappointed when I first heard about this because I thought it had to be Nutella.
Yes, me too.
You know?
Because, come on, it's Nutella. Come on.
And, you know, the size of the phone here, when you first showed me this, the first thing that went to my head was the Zoolander movie where he pulls out the smallest possible cell phone.
Tiny, itsy phone.
And the video here of where they're putting the cell phone in a pocket, and not just any pocket, not just the front pocket of a pair of jeans, but that little pocket in the front of a pair of jeans where you might put, like, you know, your couple of quarters that you needed to put into or your pocket watch. But you'd have to have a mighty tiny pocket watch to put into those things too.
But I just thought, you know, if you wanted to experiment with an Android device, it is an unlocked device, so it should work with most phone carriers. They ship it worldwide. This might be the right device for you.
Yeah, it looks very, you know, very good, easy to use, and very small.
And the fact it has two SIM cards so that you could have like a work SIM and a personal SIM in it.
Exactly.
And, you know, for all the haters out there, it does have a headphone jack.
That's pretty slick. Yeah. Pretty slick. And I liked the video that described how you can easily switch between work and personal on the device through the software.
Yes.
So I thought that was very slick too.
Because at 5:01 p.m. you flip the switch.
I do see a lot of people that walk around with multiple phones because they have a work phone and they got a non-work phone.
Well, at this size, you could carry two of these and have four
they
phone
have
lines.
Four lines. Oh, that is awesome. Well, thank you for sharing that. I'm glad you said where it came from because I was like, where was this?
And where did you find this?
If you want to get in on it, I mean, shoot, look at this. They were looking to raise $30,000 as of the time
over
of
a million.
Reporting. $1.181 million. And there's 3 days to go. So depending on how quick I get my part of the bargain done, you may have 1 day to go to get in on the Jedi through the Kickstarter.
And if not, I'm sure, let's say they increase the price by 50% when it goes retail.
It's still a deal.
It's still a crazy deal. Now, so, the thing is, with most of the you know subsidized phones on the U.S. carriers, I know this is not the case globally, but on the U.S. carriers, I mean, a lot of times you can get like an iPhone SE for free with a contract, or you know, one of the mid-tier Android phones for free with a contract. But if you just want a completely unlocked, no contract phone that you throw in a SIM, this might be the way to go.
This could be your deal. Now, if phones are not your game, but development and programming and robots are, you've come to the right place.
Yes.
In fact, Apple has taken a big step forward here with Swift Playgrounds to enable Swift Playgrounds, which is to be released on June 5th, not too far in the future here.
Well, this is an update to Swift Playgrounds because it's been out for a year.
That's true. So it's 1.5.
Yep.
They're going to enable connecting to a variety of robots and toys, not the least of which is the Lego Mindstorms environment, the Sphero environment, and more. I watched the video for this after you showed it to me, and I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. And it looks like it's making the development of code translated into three-dimensional, real moving around sort of things pretty easy.
Yeah, what's really cool is I've been playing around with the Swift Playground for about a year now on the iPad, and it's kind of fun when I just want to do some basic reinforcement of programming techniques in a Swift programming language and I'm on a plane. It's easier to, you know, pull out the iPad and play with Swift Playgrounds. And over the last few months, there's been additional playgrounds added to the app. So the basic premise was this was a programming environment with a set of very easy to use and execute lesson plans that teach you the fundamentals of what's a variable, how do you do branching, etc. And it does it using the Swift language, which Apple put out 2 years ago now, right? And so seeing it extended into the real world with interfaces to robotics is amazingly cool. And I'm trying to remember, do you remember the programming language that was targeted for game programming for kids? And I want to say it was like Ada, but it wasn't Ada, or Anya, or Ali, or something with an A.
Not right off the bat. I was thinking more about Scratch and stuff like that, but that's not where you're heading.
No, it wasn't that. But so there was a programming language that was really targeting kids to learn how to do game programming probably about 8 to 10 years ago. And what Apple is doing with Swift Playgrounds and these types of implementations of it, I think is going to be a really cool advance for students and people who just want to get started programming but don't yet have the total abstraction. I remember years ago working with our friend ePredator, and how once we started working together on virtual world stuff, he said, I could go home and actually explain to my parents what I was doing, because I could show them what the programs I was writing implemented in a virtual world, right? So you could see things happening. And you take that same experience and extend it from, okay, now I'm writing code for a mobile app, and yeah, you can kind of see a UI interface change. But with the advancements in robotics that are going on globally, to actually say, this is how I'm going to program something, and now what you will see is that device over there on the floor pick itself up, walk across the room, tap a thing on the wall, spin around three times in a circle, and then follow the dog. Because it's using visual sensors, it's using motion sensors, it's using programmatic, you know, procedural type activities, etc. I think this is really, really amazing, and hopefully aligns itself well with the general advances that are going on in robotics. And I'll have to find a link to the Smithsonian article on robotics that I was reading this week, and see if there's a good correlation there.
And that's really cool. And that, Michael, that's exactly where I was heading to, is that so much about code and coding, whether you're talking about simple languages or more complex ones, are seeing the results, debugging them, trying something different, you know, going from there, and being able to translate that quickly and easily into a three-dimensional object that is moving around in space with you is really slick.
Yeah, yeah.
And it looks like you found the article, so that's that lines up nicely. So this theme kind of continues on through much of the rest of this episode here, with a link that we saw on our feed here around Draper's Dragonfly, or Fly IE, which is the way to describe it is a cyber bug. So it is a backpack and capability that is attached to a real live dragonfly, and it's used to control the flight of this insect from a remote perspective. And I was getting a little bit of the whole Kitty Hawk experience, I guess, looking at how the video was showing how the dragonfly was being controlled through this solar backpack enabled system.
The solar powered mind control backpack, as they describe it in the article.
Yeah. This was pretty slick. And you and I have talked about before the notion of miniaturized robotics.
Yes.
And that creating insect-sized drones and so on is certainly a situation that exists today. And we'll have an example of that shortly, because that was a reminder that spun from this. And we've also talked a little bit about mind controlling insects too. Do you remember the roach example, where they were able to control the roach to turn left and right based upon electronic signals, and they could use them for rescue missions in collapsed earthquake infected buildings and stuff like that? Do you remember that too?
Yes. That's what I want, is to have mind control over roaches.
Ugh. Hey, you know, if one saves your life, you'll probably look at it in an entirely different way. I understand the revulsion. I'm with you on that. But boy, you know, wouldn't it be nice to be found when you're still alive, even if it's by some bug, right?
Yes.
So yes. This is an interesting combination of biocomputer robotic engineering, isn't it?
Yeah. And speaking of mind control.
Yeah.
I think we talked about it briefly last week. Can't remember if we went deep on it. The one session that I went to at Moog Fest, where they were talking about science fiction and science fact. And they referenced, there was a group of scientists from CERN, and they referenced a book called Quarantine. And one of the premises in this book was the ability to collapse eigenstates through this guy's mind, in the whole concept of quantum theory, et cetera. So we'll put a link in the show notes to that book too. But it got me thinking, if you're constantly controlling the mind of a bug in order to cause it to move a certain path, whether it's a dragonfly or a roach or whatever,
right?
In the universe of the book Quarantine by Greg Egan, you are actually collapsing eigenstates and having an implication to the base quantum state of the entire universe every time you do that.
Wow, really interesting. Really interesting.
So
that relates absolutely directly to another topic that I know we've talked about, but it was a while ago. This particular example came from 2014. This particular bug was not a bug. It looked like a bug, maybe. It called a Nixie, N-I-X-I-E. Yes. And the idea behind this was, hey, I'd like to get a selfie at a great visual angle, you know, which is usually from up above shooting down. Yep. And I don't want to hold a stick out somewhere, which is, you know, in some cases not doable or, you know, is not allowed, you know, Disney. So you have this wearable that you release. It flies up. It takes your picture. It comes back to you.
Yes.
And I thought that was really pretty impressive. So that was a 2014 thing, which was being created by a guy named Christoph Kohlstahl, who was a doctoral candidate at Stanford.
Yep.
And we did a little bit of a search to say, hey, well, where are they today? Right. It's 2017, right? So there is a...
Where are they today?
Well, it looks like Stanford, you know, from some of the videos that are out there. So the flynixie.com webpage, you know, it does say, hey, they're about to release, subscribe for updates, check in. You know, I want to see where they are too. So this looks pretty slick. And if you look at the first couple of videos on the homepage, this is exactly the vision, right? That you can get a great photo of you by just releasing this little bug. And it's not just a photo, it's videos as well. So...
Yeah, what's
pretty
really
cool.
Interesting about their website, and I've been playing around with it, nowhere on the website do they give you the date of any of the updates. On the
Looking
About Us
too,
part, they say
either,
2014,
yeah.
But nowhere else, anywhere on the website, does it give you a date. So they could have put this site up in 2014 and never changed it.
Well, I suppose that could have happened too, right? But then
because the press articles they link to are the articles from 2014. If you hover on all the links,
mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I
the
guess
good news
right.
is they were hiring people who did embedded software development, controls and navigation development. but. I would like, maybe they have a Twitter account. We should drop them a tweet,
yeah,
and see where they
in
stand.
And see how they're doing and see what's going on.
Because it looks
they
cool. I mean, it's a great idea. And I know there are a couple of other drones for, like selfie drones, as they call them, that follow you, right? That are being used for people like going down rivers. And for 15 minutes, it will follow you and take pictures or film you like a GoPro.
That's
I'm trying to remember
cool.
the name of that one.
I don't think I've seen that before. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'll find that one and put that in the show notes too.
Awesome. Well, the last key topic for today is a productivity topic, and one that I am rather excited about because I'm using a laptop, and that's my day-to-day work machine, and I don't have a monitor attached to it, and I love to be able to have more screen space. And I've been thinking, hey, you know, maybe I should get another monitor, and I could plug it in, and I could hook it up, and it would be really good. And Michael, you said, hey, you don't need to do that. Why don't you go spend $10?
Yeah.
And so you suggested that I get a solution called Avatron.
Avatron's the name of the company. Yes.
Which is the Okay, so it's Air Display is the name of the product.
Yep. And I've been playing with this one for a couple of years now. And what I liked about Air Display was it allows you to take your phone or your tablet, in this case in the Mac ecosystem, so iOS and Mac, and either wirelessly or via the cable, the USB cable, turn it into an additional monitor at the resolution of the display, so that when you're on the road and you need that second display, you can plug in your iPad and suddenly you have, if you have any of the newer iPads, a extremely high resolution display as a secondary monitor. And it behaves just like a secondary monitor would.
Yes. And what was really neat about it too is that not only does it behave as a secondary monitor, you can interact with it. So if you've always dreamed of having a touchscreen Mac, ta-da!
Yeah. And I have a pencil, an Apple pencil, but also the Pencil by 53, which is this big wooden pencil with a Bluetooth adapter in it.
Right.
That actually can give you a pressure-sensitive pen experience so that you can kind of treat it like a Wacom tablet.
That is pretty slick.
Yeah, and I haven't used that pencil in a long time. I guess I need to charge it.
So have you tried to use it like in Notes to do some drawing in Notes?
I tested it with Acorn, which is the drawing app that I use.
Right.
And the pencil, not the Pencil by 53, but the Apple Pencil, works better for me than a mouse or the trackpad does when you're drawing, because you're holding it like a pencil. And so for that, it was really effective. Now, I'm going to charge up my Pencil by 53 and try it out and see if the touch-sensitive aspect works as well as it could.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah. But so after I recommended that one and you've started playing with it, you found another one.
Well, I did. I showed a friend of mine and said, hey, do you know about this? This is pretty cool. And he said, well, I do, but I use that.
That. So and that one is Duet.
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 Not Duet.
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 Do it till you're satisfied, whatever it is. Oh, sorry. Duet.
So.
And I had heard of that one too, but I had personally started using Air Display first.
Right. And, you know, sometimes it's better just to stick with the thing that you got and what's working. And that's a big plus to go that route. So I went ahead and loaded Duet display on both my iPad Pro and on the Mac. And it has a number of similarities to it. So you can set it up so that you are mirroring your screen, or you can connect the one screen to the next and have an extended display. Like I like to have my Slack channel over in the iPad Pro so that I can concentrate on the other things I've got right in front of me.
That's exactly what I do too.
Many of the same kind of characteristics about I can interact with the iPad Pro, which is kind of fun because I switch keyboards because I've got the Logitech keyboard on the iPad Pro, and which is really a fantastic keyboard. And I can type into Slack on that keyboard, and I can come back and type on the other keyboard onto my main Mac, which, you know, is pretty neat too. Or I could just move over the cursor and type on the main Mac. So I've got options. I can do stuff. Some of the things that I liked about Duet and some of the differences that I've seen so far, and I've not done an in-depth, you know, case by case, item by item review, is Duet gives you an uninstall option, which I think is pretty nifty. So if I decide I don't want to do this anymore, I could just uninstall and I'm done. Second thing that I like quite a bit too is that the Duet set of developers are constantly updating the asset. So yeah. The last update that I see from Air Display in the iTunes Store is February of 2016.
Yep.
On the other hand, the Duet app has an in-app purchase for Duet Pro to enable many of the things that you've described around pressure sensitivity and other characteristics of using a pencil, Apple Pencil, and I'm not sure if they would use the other pencil that you have. That's not a use case that I have right now. So it's kind of a neat experience. It cost me $10 for one, $10 for the other. So for $10 or 20 is what I've spent. I actually have now a secondary monitor that works for me, and I have two solutions to play with to see which one I like better in the end. So
yeah, the one thing that I see on Duet, which might make me try it, but I bet you it's, well, I'll ask you, is it available in the version you have, or do I have to go pro in order to have the on-screen touch bar?
You do not have to go pro for the on-screen touch bar. That was really cool too. So if you choose to show your touch bar from your Mac, it can appear on the bottom part of your iPad, which was like, whoa, that is neat.
Yeah, that seems like a really neat solution.
And the Duet folks are saying, hey, they're ex-Apple engineers, you know, blah, blah, blah. And like I said, it's being updated and worked on constantly versus this one, which is good. Air Display is good, but I don't see any updates on it. So
yeah, that both of them appear to be iOS, Mac, and Windows. The thing that I see different on Air Display is it also supports Android. So you can extend an Android tablet into a secondary screen.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the one thing where Air Display is further along. But as you say, they haven't done any updates, but feature completeness, they seem to have had all the features in the base price that you have to pay extra for in Duet.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah, cool stuff. Well, I know we're just about out of time. You mentioned you are playing a new game.
Oh, that's right. I am. I am playing a new game. And the new game is called Mini Metro. Mini Metro. And the way Mini Metro works is you are in charge, you're large and in charge of creating a subway system. And the gameplay is such that you are striving to serve the passengers in your city and get them where they need to go without having them wait so long that they get frustrated and destroy your city, basically.
But they don't destroy your city.
They don't rampage or anything. The game just ends and says, you know, sorry, people are waiting too long. So it's kind of neat. They give you a starting point where you can have a couple of lines. You have to figure out where to create the right hubs in your environment. You have to have tunnels that you can create underneath the waterways that might happen to be going through your city, rivers, and so on. And I found it kind of a relaxing, calming little sort of puzzle game. And I've liked it a lot. I like, you know, having an extra engine I can put on the line, or adding an extra car so it can pick up people at various stations. So it's kind of fun.
Definitely looks like a game you would like.
Yeah, it does.
Nice simulation game.
Yeah. And it's not too intense, and it's real time. So it's not turn based. So I think that's kind of fun too. So I would encourage you to give it a shot.
Yeah, I played with it a little bit in the browser version.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And I can see the appeal.
Yeah, and it's nice, clean graphics and good, clean fun.
Cool.
All right, well, with that, you're right. We are out of time. So hopefully, our dear listeners, you've enjoyed today's show and the items that we have in this episode. If you have some things you'd like to share with us or have us talk about or have us take a look at, you know where to find us.
Sounds good. Have a great weekend, everybody.
We'll say, have a great weekend and see ya.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network. And would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.